Last year, there were 643 overdose deaths in Milwaukee County. That's more than the homicides and the suicides and the car accident deaths combined. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And it's not just Milwaukee County. We don't have statewide numbers yet for last year, but in 2020, the Wisconsin Department of Health counted 1,227 opioid deaths. Maybe you know or knew someone dealing with this addiction, whether you knew it or not. So what needs to be done here? What can be done here? And where can those we know go to get better? Join the conversation, 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Jay Ford, an assistant professor at the School of Pharmacy at UW-Madison. His research focuses on expanding the use and adoption of practices to improve patient outcomes and quality of care. Hey, Jay, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
Let's begin with the role that methadone and other drugs like it can play in treating opioid addiction. What makes methadone effective, as you see, Jay, in treating opioid addictions?
Well, one of the things about methadone is it's kind of a long-acting opioid agonist. So it's something that's going to help the individual with an opioid use disorder, you know, reduce their craving, and it's going to help with withdrawal and kind of blunt and block the effects of the opioid that they're taking. Methadone as a medication is something that individuals have to take on a daily basis. So they have to go and either take the medication in a liquid or a tablet or a kind of a powder or diskette form. But it's something they have to do, in person. And somebody actually has to see them take the medication.
So it sounds like there's a process to use methadone and to start the process of recovery. So give me some idea in the eyes of somebody with an addiction, what steps they take to get to being able to use methadone in a recovery program.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So first of all, methadone, like many of the other medications, was approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. But what's unique about methadone compared to something like buprenorphine or naltrexone is it can only be dispensed at opioid treatment programs that are licensed by the Substance Use and Mental Health Services Administration at the federal government. So in Wisconsin, there are about 20 to 25 of these organizations. Most of them are in the Madison, Milwaukee, or kind of up toward the Fox Valley area. But someone who is taking methadone would have to typically, get up probably fairly early in the morning, drive to the closest opioid treatment program in the state. They would wait in line until the program actually opened, and then they would go in and typically they'll have a urine drug screen or a urine drug test to make sure that they're not on opioids. If that comes back, negative, then they'll be given the methadone dose either as a liquid or, as I mentioned, a powder or a diskette form. And then they'll take that in front of an individual within the opioid treatment program. So the idea, what they're trying to avoid by doing that is someone diverting methadone, to somebody else. So then the person leaves, but then they have to come back and do that the next day. So this is an ongoing daily basis that people have to go through to get their methadone. Works great, maybe if you're in a city like Madison or Milwaukee, where it's a little easier to get to.
It sounds like barrier after barrier for people.
Yes.
Who we would be trying to eliminate these barriers towards recovery. And we wonder why we have an opioid epidemic and why it's difficult to get our hands around it. And there are many aspects to this, but one would be getting people into a system for recovery. And one of the easy, or at least most available systems for recovery would be at least starting a replacement therapy to get away from street drugs, which we, as we know, have become increasingly deadly with fentanyl supply. So, Jay Ford, from your position here, why are there more barriers for using methadone versus some of the other drugs you've mentioned? And I've heard from others saying they prefer the other drugs, but maybe that's just because of the process here.
Yeah. So, each ironically, each one of the kind of the three main medications for opioids have their own barriers. We talked a little bit about methadone. Someone who's on buprenorphine, which is another medication, they can only get that from a physician that has gone through specialized training. Whereas a medication like naltrexone is something that a provider, a nurse practitioner could prescribe to an individual and they could get that without, you know, the barriers. I think some of these barriers, you know, exist from a system that was, you know, created long ago. One of the issues might be that, about 40% of the OTPs are run by for-profit companies, which is fine, but, moving away from that model is going to hurt, you know, their bottom line. But the idea that someone has to get up, 5:30 in the morning to go get a medication, you know, for a chronic condition is crazy, because we don't, if we're a diabetic or an asthmatic or with high blood pressure, we don't have to go to a specialized clinic every day to watch somebody take our, to have somebody watch us take our medication.
So what I'm getting from you, Jay Ford, is that we have some outdated rules that in some way may be impeding our opportunity to work towards getting a handle on an opioid epidemic that is becoming increasingly deadly on the streets.
Yes, I think that's true. I know that there's a push at the federal level to relax some of the, or to continue, not relax, continue some of the rules that were put in place during the COVID-19 pandemic. Especially as it relates to access to methadone and other medications. People are looking at ways to, continue to allow, take-home methadone that was occurring during the pandemic and other things. So people, the SAMHSA and the federal government are looking at ways to maybe waive and put some of those rules into place permanently.
And you would be, from your position and your work, you would see that as an effective and you would be supportive of this relaxing of these restrictions for the purpose of dealing with this opioid epidemic and, people who are struggling with addiction?
Yeah, I think the more we can do to increase access to medications for opioid use disorders that people need, the better. I mean, there are just too many barriers that exist in the systems, to allow people to easily access the medications. And so there are opportunities to improve that. And I think the more that we embrace and try these new ideas, the better off we are in terms of trying to address the ongoing opioid epidemic.
So we're talking about how drugs for opioid use disorder are distributed with Jay Ford. He's an assistant professor at the UW-Madison School of Pharmacy, and we invite you to join us. Have you undergone treatment for opioid use disorder? And what barriers to access have you faced when trying to get drug treatment? Share your stories. They may help. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us ideas at WPR.org. Jay, one of the things that I've heard, but I haven't heard you mention yet, is Suboxone, another a replacement therapy drug that would be available that I've heard some prefer to methadone. And I'm wondering, again, is that because of the drug itself or the barriers involved?
Suboxone is, a different type of medication. And so typically that is something that has to be dispensed as part of kind of the larger buprenorphine family that, but it has to be dispensed by a physician or a nurse practitioner who's undergone specialized training. And those individuals typically can only see a certain number of patients on their panel. So while it's better and somebody can go get that and maybe get a 7-day supply of Suboxone that they can take at home without that direct supervision, there's still barriers in place to getting access to that. So I think in terms of Suboxone versus methadone, it really is, comes down to kind of the medication that's going to work best for the individual. Some people are more tolerant of something like Suboxone than they are methadone. But others prefer methadone because it provides them with an accountability that they feel like they need on a daily basis, in terms of taking the medications.
And you alluded to this, Jay Ford, and I want to ask you directly about the pandemic. And I mentioned how, you know, we're just beginning to understand because of the isolation that comes with addiction and the isolation that came with pandemic. It wasn't abundantly clear or immediately clear. And we've seen the same thing with alcohol addiction recently. I would ask you how you see the pandemic affecting what not just the opioid epidemic, but how the distribution of methadone and other replacement therapies available to begin recovery.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, you know, that impacted it most likely was just, you know, people's general access. I mean, I think the treatment programs, you know, did their best to, stay open and provide services, but, you know, they had to get a little creative because some of these services, might also come with having a counseling session with a licensed behavioral health specialist, a social worker, you know, to talk through some of the addiction issues. Well, you know, the ability to meet in person, you know, went away. So then you had to kind of start thinking creatively about the use of telehealth or other mechanisms to provide this connection for people. So I think you had that going on, but you also had individuals, isolation. So there wasn't, maybe there wasn't accountability for someone who was struggling with an opioid or an alcohol use disorder of someone who could actually, help them, get the help that they needed.
Jay Ford, our guest, assistant professor at the School of Pharmacy at UW-Madison, taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, taking a look at access to methadone and other drugs that can be effective in beginning the process of recovery for people who are struggling with addiction. What questions do you have about what we can do to reduce the barriers and begin the process towards recovery for those who are seeking it? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Last month, Democratic Senator Ed Markey and Republican Senator Rand Paul introduced legislation that would ease the rules around the distribution of methadone, a replacement narcotic used to treat opioid addiction. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Jay Ford, assistant professor at the UW School of Pharmacy. Have you or someone you know had any experience in dealing with methadone clinics? And if you're in recovery, please share your story with us. It may just help provide a roadmap for others. 1-800-642-1234 to join the conversation, or you can email us ideas@wpr.org. And Jay, Wisconsin is set to receive over $400 million as part of three separate settlements now. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services says expanded treatment options are a priority. If you were in charge of this purse, how would you see that money spent?
Wow, that's a good question. One of the things I would look at is, really working with and across the healthcare community, in particular, there are pharmacies in almost every community, and pharmacists are trained to, dispense medication. And I think that's one of the things that's in the act that you mentioned that coming back into this segment is the Bipartisan Opioid Treatment Act is encouraging to allow pharmacists to dispense, methadone to people from the opioid treatment program. So that's one thing I think we can look at, maybe trying to figure out how can we expand, access to other medications like buprenorphine or Vivitrol. There's some of these medications that are long-acting injections. So I think, providing access through either pharmacies or other healthcare providers is a way to do that. One of the other things that could be creative is actually take the medications to the individual. So this idea of, creating a mobile medication van, for people who don't have access and actually go to these individuals and bring the access to them rather than having somebody have to drive, hours to get to an OTP if they're taking methadone, maybe you take the mobile van to them and they only have to drive to somewhere in their local community to get that. So, you know, I think those are just some ideas off the top of my head about how we might use that money.
Sure. And Jay, I want to ask, do we have enough access to detox services for people who are dealing with opioid addiction or opioid use disorder?
In my opinion, no. You know, there are a lot of wonderful, you know, treatment programs, you know, across the state. But a lot of them are limited by capacity, whether it be bed capacity, whether it be capacity of trained staff like physicians who need to be able to prescribe methadone or buprenorphine, and then even you know, trained staff to work with these individuals. You know, there's a lot of great people that are working in the field, and I've met a lot of them both in Wisconsin and across the country, but I don't think they have all the support that they need, you know, to do that. And so I think there's more that we could do to look for opportunities to expand these services, you know, in all corners of the state.
Let's go to your calls and questions now at 1-800-642-1234, where Lori and Madison is standing by. Lori, you're on the air with Jay Ford, assistant professor at the UW School of Pharmacy.
Hi, yeah, thank you. I'm just calling to talk about my concern. One of the huge barriers I see is just the immediacy to treatment. I feel that when an addict decides that they want treatment, you know, having to wait for an appointment is a barrier. I mean, when the person is ready for treatment, it's like you have such a sweet spot to get them into treatment. And when they have to wait, you kind of lose that opportunity. So a real huge barrier is just that lack of immediate access to treatment.
Lori, I appreciate your call. Thank you. And that window, Jay Ford, and as you work on your research focuses on expanding the use and adoption of practices to improve patient outcomes and the quality of care, what do you think about that window and how we have to get people into that window, as small as it may be?
Yeah, Lori is really right on in terms of what she's talking about. When I first got into the field, oftentimes people would have to wait, you know, weeks or longer, you know, just to get an initial appointment for somebody to come in and screen them, you know, to determine whether or not they are, you know, even eligible to get services. You know, some providers have moved to a walk-in, you know, clinic model, which I think helps reduce some of those barriers, but they still exist. I mean, especially if someone needs, you know, residential inpatient treatment, that's a strong issue of access to beds. I think it's more prevalent, most likely in the state, in terms of adolescent treatment beds. So, you know, going back to your earlier question, you know, that might be another opportunity is to try to look at, you know, residential treatment programs in the state and expand where necessary, whether that be for adolescents or adults.
Lori, thank you so much for the call. Still time for yours at 1-800-642-1234. And Sean from Green Bay had a note here about people he knew who were taking methadone, but also still using intoxicants. Whether or not that is, you know, something that you've seen, Jay, that methadone is being used, but there is still a lack of a recovery process there.
I haven't seen that personally, but I'm not surprised that, you know, some of that's going on. I mean, you know, the methadone is designed to block the cravings for opioids, but, you know, someone could still be, you know, taking other medications or dealing with other, you know, co-occurring issues. You know, maybe their opioid is being blunted, but they're still, you know, drinking and have an alcohol issue. So yeah. I'm not surprised of that going on.
Let's go to Pete in Green Bay. Pete, you're on the air with Jay Ford from the UW School of Pharmacy.
How you doing, Jay?
I'm fine, Pete.
Hey, I was talking about the money that the state's getting. Unfortunately, I've got a son that I deal with addiction. It's been going on for probably 5 years. He's 24 years old, or 25. So probably a little bit more than that, actually, as far as the length of time. But I've taken him in where he's wanted to go in and tried to get him to detox at a couple different places, went through the emergency rooms at a couple different places. And the emergency rooms will not, the hospital systems won't take a opioid addiction for detox. Their thoughts are that, you know, they'll get them in there for 72 hours and then, you know, they leave the hospital back to using again, which may be valid, may not be valid. But there seems to be a lot of roadblocks in trying to get into a actual detox area where he really, you know, had made the choice to, I'm going to do this, you know, and we get to the hospital and then only to be turned away. You know, and I've done that a couple times with him. So maybe, you know, some more treatment on that end of it. I'm not sure how it would work. But the other thing is he's in a methadone program right now that works well for him. The barriers that he had originally a couple years ago about getting into the methadone program don't seem to be there anymore, like costs and paying up front. But so at least he's in a harm reduction phase. I'm not saying that he doesn't still use because he does, you know, they use marijuana and that. So he's got other things going on along with that. But he does not miss going to the methadone clinic. So at least for now, that's a plus. So that's a lot there, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Pete, I very much appreciate you sharing your family story. And, Jay, we're just about out of time here. So what can you say to Pete's experience?
First of all, Pete, thank you for sharing that. I know it's got to be very challenging. And unfortunately, I think it's relatively common. I think there are, you know, inherent challenges in the system that really do need to be addressed. I mean, we don't face these challenges if we're trying to get help for other chronic conditions.
Yeah, and something to keep in mind. Jay Ford, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Assistant professor at the School of Pharmacy at UW-Madison. Just ahead, we're talking about hospice care and Medicaid, and what questions do you have about end-of-life compassionate care? That's after the news. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.